Hey there, little flockers. Adam here. We're going to take a quick second before the podcast to talk about an online auction event going on right now called Art for Shelter. It's for the Pavarello Center here in Missoula. It's our local homeless shelter. Here in COVID times, they have had to reduce their capacity by over 30% to maintain proper social distancing. But unfortunately, within that time, with economic conditions as they are, they also have more people that need their help. So to help make up the difference in the lack of funding they have this year, there's been an online auction, an art auction put together for them. You can check out some beautiful pieces of art at thepavarellocenter.org/artforshelter. If you do bid on an item and you do win it, I will personally pay for the shipping costs to get it to you out of state. And the reason this is near and dear to my heart is my daughter, Isabel, is the one who organized this entire event. High school senior. This is how she's been spending her summer here during COVID, putting together this wonderful fundraiser. If you can help support her, give her a taste of success for doing good, I'd really appreciate it. And it's also helping the homeless right here in Missoula.
Bidding ends on the 22nd, so be sure and check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes, and good luck with the auction. This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 301. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, Montana Seahawker, my good buddy Adam Emmert.
Yeah, man, on a day where we've yet again not signed a defensive end or defensive lineman, it's a great day to be a Seahawks fan.
It's been a week since we did our last show, and we've signed a defensive lineman in this past week.
Well, okay, I mean, one that matters.
Brandon Jackson is back on the team, Adam.
Yeah, I'm really pinning a lot of hopes to Brandon Jackson coming back and igniting that pass rush. He was just that close last year from just lighting the league on fire and being basically Von Miller 2.0.
Didn't he have like two whole sacks?
Two whole sacks. Yeah, probably.
That puts him in position to be a team leader, though.
Yeah. Well, therein lies the problem. Yeah.
What was that, one behind the team leader?
Yeah. Although we did not get any amazing news that we've all been waiting for regarding defensive line. We did have other news in Seahawks land that was kind of encouraging. Something that I felt was so not probable that I had already written the fella off. Quentin Dunbar.
Yeah. Charges dropped. And not only were the charges dropped, but removed from the commissioner's exempt list.
Yeah.
So as people are listening to this on Wednesday, you know, the cool thing about Wednesday is that it's going to be the first streamed practice from the Seahawks facility. So we may Dunbar might be out there.
Yeah, I'd say the probability is very high that he'll be out there. And I don't know if they wanted to kind of start the show here, but I was excited about that news. Or if you wanted to save that towards the second half and want to rip the 49ers for a half of a show first.
Well, I feel like this is the biggest Seahawks news of the week, right? We should talk about Dunbar because it's a significant addition. And because I think we looked at back in May as, okay, here was maybe one of the biggest trades for the team at the time. Well, probably the only real big trade of the offseason was making the move with Washington to get Quentin Dunbar. And with that idea of improving the secondary, we saw at the end of the last season against the Packers, there was a definite need for the team to maybe add some people there. And then so with the Jamal Adams trade coming down after Dunbar was put on the exempt list and maybe looking like he wasn't going to play, I think a lot of Seahawks fans probably said, okay, Dunbar's gone, but now we're going to have Jamal Adams, and that's going to significantly improve the secondary. But now, Adam, both are going to be a part of it. And this introduces some big questions, I think, for the team and just how things are going to look come week one.
Yeah, it does. It raises a lot of different questions and a lot of different possibilities, right? Which is kind of the fun part about it. Because when you add Dunbar into that mix of the guys that we do now have in the secondary with Jamal Adams now included, all of a sudden, this group, compared to last year, with just the addition of two guys, all of a sudden, you look at it and go, holy crap, is this the best secondary in the NFL? And there's an argument to be made there. I'd probably die on that hill, actually, if you wanted me to do it. I truly feel like, you know, from the back end now all the way down to our front four, one of the best defenses in the league. You know, you take the linebacking core and the secondary and put that together. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you've got something here.
Well, yeah. Just when you count Pro Bowlers in that back seven, right? KJ's been a Pro Bowler. Bobby Wagner, all pro, multiple Pro Bowls. I don't think Bruce Irvin's made it, but you know, you also have a first round. Well, no, that was another piece of news. First round pick Jordan Brooks, more of the weak side linebacker, is where Pete Carroll kind of envisions him early on.
He always says that crap.
I know,
with these guys, and you never know. He'll go on the field. How about that?
But counting up the Pro Bowls, then you go over to Shaquille Griffin. Quandre Diggs was a guy who made the Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. despite playing in so few games last season. But and then Jamal Adams with Pro Bowls and an All Pro. So Dunbar, Trey Flowers, you guys go out and compete for that first spot. I still. With him coming off the commissioner's exempt list, he still has the ability to be suspended by the commissioner. We've seen that happen even when guys aren't charged. So that could happen. And that's what makes me still lean toward Trey Flowers maybe being in that week one lineup ahead of Dunbar.
Well, not only does Trey Flowers have more experience in the system and the kick step technique and all that stuff, this is kind of when Seahawks corners have traditionally kind of broken out and had a big year, and that's year three. And Trey Flowers is hitting that right now. Now, as far as Dunbar being suspended, possibly from this point out, let's think about that for a second, because one thing that's awesome here is that it was made clear that this was the New York Football Giants' fault, and all of the blame has now been placed on Baker, right? So the NFL has their fall guy to punish for this in Baker.
Right.
And like, yeah, you just no more of you. We've suspended you forever. Dunbar is an afterthought in all of this. It's like, oh, yeah. And Dunbar didn't really do anything. And I don't see the league because usually these suspensions that the league comes down with, they're for appearances sake.
Sure.
It's almost always for appearances sake. Well, they don't really have to do that in this situation. And if they do, I don't know that it's going to be more than 2-3 weeks. I'd be surprised if it was, because again, like people say, well, Jaron Reed, like, look at him. I mean, he had his charges dropped and he still was suspended 6 games. That kind of stunned the Seahawks. And it's like, yeah, well, number one, there wasn't another fall guy. Number two, they were domestic violence charges, which especially in that time period, with Me Too really kind of taking steam and all that, the league had to look right and suspend him, even though, the charges were dropped. This, nobody really cares. They really don't.
There was the moment where Quentin Dunbar's lawyer came out and said, hey, Dunbar wasn't even there when this all went down. So that could still be true.
Who knows, man? But point being is that Quentin Dunbar is going to be a large part of the season no matter what.
Yeah.
And that is a big difference maker for the secondary. So as we went into this offseason, we talked about the pass rush in terms of, it's a chicken and egg kind of thing. Do you believe that interceptions and a great secondary is the result of a great pass rush? Or do you believe that interceptions and a great secondary allows for more sacks because they cover better? You have coverage sacks and get your guys a little bit more time to get to the quarterback. So you can kind of see that. I don't know if this is the way that John Schneider and Pete Carroll believe that sacks are created, but maybe it was just a case of the best players available in a trade happened to be secondary. So 6-1 half does the other, which way are you going to build it? All right, we're going to go after secondary first and then worry about pass rush second. And this should help.
Well, if you think in terms of market inefficiency, then building the back end is probably cheaper in terms of the way the Seahawks are able to do it, because they're able to go out and find guys and get more out of guys than other teams have. Justin Coleman, one of those guys that they were able to get more out of. Quandre Diggs, a guy that apparently they were able to get more out of, although he was really talented in the with the Detroit Lions, but somebody that they saw as being expendable from their system, even though he still had 2 more years left on his deal. So Shaquille Griffin, who was a third round pick, somebody that other teams were overlooking, slipped to the Seahawks, and Pete Carroll saw enough in him to make him an immediate starter. Trey Flowers, a guy that they saw as a guy that could convert from safety and start almost immediately at the corner position. So they have been able to make more. Now they've had their whiffs in those spots too. Yeah. But
you can't be perfect all the time.
No, but I think when you look at what they get out of what they spend at those positions, there's been those moments, you know, before the entire Legion of Boom had to get paid too. You know, they were getting more talent out of those players than probably other teams saw in them anyway.
Sure. And maybe to answer our question, they do believe in building this from the secondary in. I mean, look at the way they built the LOB to start with, right? They started with a high draft pick on Earl. They started with snagging Cam and Sherm and starting them early in their careers and finding Brandon Browner and getting the most out of guys that people didn't think had a lot to give, right?
Right.
And then they built the pass rush. Then it was the shrewd signings of Mike Bennett, Cliff Averill, things like that. You know, Bruce Irvin being a better draft pick than everybody thought. They kind of built it on the second phase of it, really. So maybe that's the blueprint that they're following here.
It could be.
My question though, Brandon, ultimately, let's say that there's not another signing. There's not another signing on the defensive line
at all.
This is who we got. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Let's say that's the case. Is the defense better today than it was going into the season last year?
Yes, I do think so, because especially when you look at the back end and you had Tedrick Thompson and who did you have? Lano Hill. Were those the two safeties last year, week one starting?
Or no, McDougald was injured.
McDougald. Yeah. Still, okay. You had Tedrick starting.
Yes.
The difference was you had Clowney versus
Jamal Adams now. And Quandre Diggs.
Yeah.
And Dunbar.
Yeah, I think that's better. But I don't think they're done on the defensive line either. Now, we heard from Mike Silver that the Seahawks have moved on from Clowney. They're maybe looking.
Wait, they've moved on from Clowney now?
Apparently.
Or is the door still open? I'm sure that report's going to come out like another day. Now, and then a report, well, they don't have the cap space. And then another report that they got the cap space. Yeah. And then there'll be a report that Clowney has no interest in the Seahawks, didn't enjoy his time there. And then another one that comes out and says, no, he loved it there. And Pete Carroll was amazing for him. Bloopity blue. I don't know.
I had a problem with that report, too, because apparently moving on from you, because you can't look at other guys just in case he doesn't come back.
Yeah.
It seems like that's more of what they're doing. Okay. What are guys like Clay Matthews and Griffin doing right now? Mm-hmm. So I could see them being fallback players. I hope they don't have to fall all the way back to Clay Matthews, because that doesn't really seem like the type of fit for the defensive line that they're really looking for, unless it's just a veteran guy that third down you can bring in and have some depth there. But
gosh. No, thanks. I've seen the aging pass rusher show before, you know, not just on the Seahawks like Dwight Freeney or, you know, just any of that, right? Where this team brings in an aging pass rusher and they're like, hey, man, maybe we'll get 6, 7, 8 sacks out of him, dude.
I think that the Rams probably got about as much as they could have out of him last year.
Yeah, I know. And that, I think that was probably the last one.
But Everson Griffin, I'd like to have him on the team.
Yes, very much. Maybe Marcel Darius, Mike Daniels.
Yeah, Marcel Darius is one of those names that we saw out there a little bit more. And he's a guy that is interesting to me because wasn't he just... He was a Pro Bowl caliber player when he was at Buffalo, right?
He had one of those kind of breakout defensive tackle seasons. And you see this more often than not at defensive tackle. Most people are not Aaron Donald and put up a bunch of sacks year in, year out from the interior. Usually in Jaron Reed, you'll get a guy that like produces big for like 1 year. And then from there on out, they're like 2, 3 sacks.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where Darius has been. He's more of a run stuffer, like every single interior player that there is.
Which is fine. We could use that.
Yes. That's not a bad thing. That's exactly what you need them to do.
The people look at his time in Jacksonville and say, well, he was a disappointment because he didn't do what he did in Buffalo.
Yeah. I guess I'd point to that and be like, Jacksonville is a disappointment and compared to Buffalo. Just that whole organization is a disappointment, except for Shaq Khan's mustache.
Right.
And Gardner Minshew's mustache. Maybe that's the thing down there. They just need more guys with mustaches.
They could have the all mustache team. That could be their brand down in Jacksonville.
Yes, because it certainly isn't winning. So I think traditionally the bigger defensive tackles, they can play later in their career. Their game isn't built on speed and quickness. Their game is built on being a hoss, just a big dude and eating up blocks. And he can still do that. I do believe they will bring in probably two more dudes, but I think at this point I am feeling fired up about the defense, because I think when we got done with the season last year, I think we could all point at the team and be like, defense was the problem.
Right.
I mean, more so than the offense. I mean, that's definitely the unit that was holding us back. Right. I feel like you have the kind of depth and the, you know, just game changing players out there to take this from a team that gave up, I don't recall what they gave up per game last year in points. It probably was around 28. I don't know. I'm not going to look it up, and I don't really care.
It was somewhere in the middle of the pack.
Yeah. And give up 4 to 7 less points a game. That means Russ has to do just a little less to win. And he can easily do that. You make it just that much easier on Russ, and you go from 11 wins to 13 wins, which is one seed and a bye. And all of a sudden things look very different.
24 points per game for the Seahawks, 24.2, I guess, if you want the decimal.
There you go.
19th in the league. So even if you improve by
4 points a game or so,
if you can improve by 4 points a game, that puts you tied for the top 10.
There you go. And I think with these moves, you've done that if you're John Schneider.
And a lot of it depends on how they're going to approach the offense this year, too. Are they going to be a little more aggressive early on just to because with I think a stronger defense, maybe you can afford to take some more chances earlier on in games.
So I'll ask you a quick question. When Pete Carroll has a stronger defense, does he play more recklessly on offense or more conservative?
Do you think it's more conservative?
Let me give you a scenario that we saw. 3rd and 8 on your own 46. And does Pete Carroll punt, or does he basically just run it in the line and then punt, or does he actually air it out and go for it?
You know, there's ways of being more aggressive without going to right to third down situations. I think there are.
Yeah. Well, and that's first down throw percentages, things like that, that most people are calling for. And I think they could, I think they will increase that a little bit this year.
I don't think they can go back the other way.
No, I feel like they kind of hit that bottom of that. And I'd say bottom, but I don't hate Pete Carroll's style of play like most people do. Like I'm not full on, you know, let Chef Russ cook. I like their brand of ball a lot. They cram it down their throat, impose your will, wear them down, and then let Russ make huge plays towards the end. Or I just wish that they would let him make a couple more big plays. But that brings
us to... It's okay to have a lead going into halftime. It's okay. Yes. You don't have to be behind going into halftime every single game.
But we know that's going to happen, that they're going to have a lead going into halftime every single game, because I don't know if you've heard about it, Brandon, but this is not a very widely discussed topic, but DK Metcalf is going to have a breakout second season.
Yeah.
It's a breakout second season. He's the next Megatron. He's going to be the first guy to get over 1,300 yards in a season for the Seahawks. Like, I don't know. This has not been reported on. Nobody's talking about it. It's just so under the radar that DK Metcalf is going to basically break Randy Moss's single season touchdown record. It just, nobody's talking about it.
Is there an opposing viewpoint on this? I feel like this is just what's going to happen.
Apparently, like he can't just have another good year. Like I don't get this. I don't, and it's hilarious because it's just like every other story.
Well, you have to pick guys to have the best year ever, and why not DK Metcalf?
Why not Tyler Lockett? Why not Philip Dorsett? Why not Will Disley? Why not? I mean, you can pick anybody. They just have a fascination with DK. He's a big story
because he's amazing.
Yeah, like, he's a damn good receiver. Yes. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Good Lord.
Hey, I pulled back a little bit last year from the excitement. I want to go full on excitement into year
two. Full in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's that. You've heard of that sophomore slump thing, right?
Ah.
Manage your expectations, Brandon, so you're not disappointed.
I want to be excited about DK Metcalf this year.
I am excited about DK Metcalf. I look at the weapons and I think that offense is pretty loaded.
It is.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I saw an article the other day from somebody at Field Goals. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Alistair. But it said it starts out with something like, as the debate between Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon rages on. And I thought to myself, what debate? that's raging on anywhere? Is anybody even talking about this?
That's who could be the third guy to come in and really, you know, set this lineup of star receivers.
Yeah, but I think we all know they're not signing Antonio Brown by now, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And then Pete said, yeah, we'd be open to Josh Gordon if it all works out. There's no debate here. Like, if it works out, Josh Gordon, we'll bring him in. If not, we feel pretty set, which they should.
Again, I think, you know, we've had this discussion over the offseason, and really it comes down to which guy are you okay with being the fifth most targeted receiver on this team after Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Greg Olsen, and Will Disley?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? If Philip Dorsett's that guy or David Moore's that guy, okay. Yeah. That's whatever fifth guy.
Yeah, we do this every year in the offseason. And let's not forget how many balls Chris Carson caught out of the backfield last year.
Yeah, we might even be talking about who's the sixth guy then if you throw Chris Carson in there.
Exactly. People are wringing their hands. Oh, man, we don't have enough receivers.
Don't have enough offensive depth.
Stop it.
Meanwhile, look at Green Bay, and they're going, gosh, could we get a number two behind Devontae Adams?
Right. Yes. This will be a year that I do think that they go in on, all right, we got to outscore people a little bit. And they'll really go for it. It's going to be fun, man. As this offseason shapes up, I get more and more optimistic as to what the end of this season could look like. So I saw the article as well with Jamal Adams. Does that make Seattle a Super Bowl contender? And I was like, it sure still does. Yeah, it sure still does.
Yeah. Do they have Russell Wilson on the team? Yes.
Check.
Are they a super? That's how those little diagrams go.
The little Venn diagram?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a Venn diagram.
No, because those are the circles that overlap. Like, this is a flow chart.
Yeah. This is a flow chart. Yes.
Yeah.
Of is a team a Super Bowl contender? Do they have Russell Wilson? Yes.
Yes.
Team is Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. No? Then they got a bunch of other questions. Yeah. But yeah.
Is Patrick Mahomes? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun year, man. That Quentin Dunbar news, like, so that was the first kind of piece to this offseason puzzle that we looked at it and we're like, fifth rounder for this dude? Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that was shrewd John Schneider. And they were like, oh, he's going to jail forever. Boo. And it's like, hooray, he's back. And like, all of a sudden, that's like this extra piece after the Jamal Adams trade that you're just like, holy crap. Like, right. This is a loaded roster now in the back end. It's going to be fun, man. And I know people look at this and they're like, oh, LOB 2.0. We can stop with that. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I mentioned on the last show that to bring that up would just be to say that that's not what we're calling it.
Correct. Yes. But some people are trying to go there.
You mentioned how this is going to be a fun season. It could be a weird season too, though. And we're already getting a sense of this because John Ursua was put on the reserve COVID list this past week. And then we found out on Tuesday that he had two false positives, which means that he had two false tests, which means the first test was a false positive. And so now he's back on the team. And
yes, so he had two tests taken. His first one was a false positive. Three tests. Oh, I thought it was two.
No, he just had on Tuesday. He had the second false test.
Second, he had the second negative test. So he tested positive once falsely. Then he had two tests that were negative.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. You're saying it correctly and I'm not.
Right. Yeah. One's clear. One's not. That's why I just wanted to do that. So congratulations to Ursua for not having the vid. Maybe he's that guy that competes for the sixth most touches on the team.
He could be that guy too.
Which I'd be excited about.
It just introduces this weird thing to me of how this is going to go throughout the season. How many guys are going to test positive falsely going into a game. And then you find out the next week, oh, it was a false positive. Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, that's one of the things with any kind of testing for anything. There are false positives. That is part of the nature of testing. There's not one test on God's green earth that's 100% accurate every time for life. So we'll have to deal with it. Now, the percentages of false positives are very small. So I don't think false positives are going to be a thing that makes the season very weird. I think it'll be actual positives. Mm. That's going to be interesting because then all of a sudden it's like, oh crap. Now you're 2 weeks without a guy minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on if it's two or three guys from a key position group or just one key dude, like, yeah, that could be tough. And if you're the Seahawks, do you go out and get Vladimir Putin's experimental brand new COVID vaccine? Do you do it? Do you go Ruski vaccine and give it a risk?
Because the teams that are going to weather this storm the best,
yeah,
are going to be there in the end.
Yeah. Either that, or will it automatically turn every member of your franchise into a Manchurian candidate? I don't know.
That's the risk that you take.
You don't know.
Would you accept that if the Seahawks won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I would. Especially, and even if it was to prove that the evil Bond villain mastermind Bill Gates had teamed up with Vladimir Putin and put microchips in the vaccines to control the Seahawks players to allow them to win a Super Bowl, to then use that power for worldwide domination. I think I'm in for a second ring.
See, now we're getting into second half show stuff. I think this is time to move on to our Know Your Rivals section and talk some San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, what? You don't think that Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates and Vladimir Putin are in cahoots together?
I'm not saying it's not true. I just say I want to explore it, and I would prefer to do it in the second half of the show.
I think that's as far as it ever would need to be explored ever. You know what I hate more than dirty Russians when they're, you know, plotting to take over the world?
San Francisco 49ers.
By a lot. I really do. Can we start the Know Your Rivals San Francisco 49ers with the phrase, catfish the Niners?
Always and forever.
Yes.
Because this is the team. Now, we've held off on this particular team. I'm glad we didn't have to talk about them in our last episode, a milestone show.
Yeah.
Got to put it off to this week. But this is the team that the fun thing was, Adam, I don't know if you saw this. I posted it in the Ring of Honor. Clint Bonner and I, we did a look back at the Super Bowl loss.
I saw you had done that.
Yeah.
And I did not have the time to go back and rewatch a painful loss for the stupid Niners. But I bet you it felt pretty good.
We made it available up at gettingtheflock.com for mm-hmm. our supporters there, our members of the flock. So yeah, Clinton and I went and watched the last 20 minutes of the Super Bowl. We started about the time before they got the second interception of Mahomes in the second half, where okay. they did in the fourth quarter. It was about 12 minutes left, and they all mm-hmm. you know, got together for the group photo like they had won the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
being up 20-10.
Yeah, right before they melted down and withered.
Yeah, and ended up losing by 11.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a wild roller coaster to go back and relive, just seeing them up by 10 points and having the football with 12 minutes to go mm-hmm. and completely collapsing in those final moments. Mm-hmm. And especially that deep pass to Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 15.
Do we have time to run Wasp? That's my Mahomes impersonation, because he sounds like a growly cookie monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it helped. It really helped get me excited for this week of 49ers hatred that we're about to get into.
Right. Well, let's first start with some of the things that the media is saying and stuff of that nature. Now, you've got most people in the media, and they do this every year. Every team is more or less the team that they were the season before, unless there's some big hyped move that really moves the needle with the media, right? Like Hopkins to Arizona.
Yeah, that moved the needle.
That sort of thing. Otherwise, if you're the Niners and you went to the Super Bowl last year and had a heartbreaking loss that usually crushes the soul of a team going into their next season, they'll probably just win that division again and be in the Super Bowl and right in the running. But history shows us that's not not true. Doesn't really happen.
Generally not true. And this 49ers team, when you talk about things that the media is pointing to, they point to all the moves that there's more of a likelihood that they're going to get worse than they are going to either improve or be about the same. Because you point to the fact of Joe Staley's retirement and they get Trent Williams. That's seems like, and that's probably the more lateral move of any of them. And maybe even an upgrade it's a risk with Trent Williams because he didn't play last year, but I think he's better than Joe Staley.
And he's old.
Well, he's 32, 33.
I think he's older than that.
No, I think he's younger than Dwayne Brown.
How old is Russell Okung?
Probably, did he come out that same year?
Yes.
Okay. And because Dwayne Brown was what, 2008, 2009?
I don't know.
Right in there? Yeah. Anyway.
You're asking me questions I didn't have the answer to.
He's old-ish. He's over 30. He's in the over 30 club, but under 35.
Yes.
That move aside, you have DeForest Buckner, which is the team's biggest loss. And people are pointing to, well, they got the 13th overall or 14th overall pick. And
Kinlaw.
Get Javon Kinlaw, who's... But he's only a pass rushing specialist generally. He's not going to stop the run the same way DeForest Buckner did.
So the biggest strength of the San Francisco 49ers last year was the defensive front. And most people will point to Joey Bosa as being the difference maker in that way, right? Because he was the newest addition to that group.
Yeah.
But the dirty little secret is that the guy that is the straw that stirs the drink of the 49ers defensive line was Buckner. And they're getting to this point to where they have to start paying guys, right? And they didn't want to make the quote mistake of paying a defensive tackle, because we've seen that work out over the course of history. Like, the guy still produces in it and it's great, but you don't actually get better as a team at any given point because you're hamstrung by the contract, right? It's just a position that you can't spend that kind of money on and still compete. So they decide to trade him for a first round pick. Now, all right, is that savvy when it comes in regard to the cap here in the immediate future? Yes. Now, does that make them better on the defensive line going forward? Absolutely not. You're telling me that rookie Javon Kinlaw is going to be a lateral move or upgrade over DeForest Buckner?
No.
Absolutely no way. And then they ended up paying Armstead anyways.
Right. Yeah, I was going to bring that up, that them not wanting to pay $20 million to a defensive tackle, but they'll pay $17.
Yeah. And so I really think that is the biggest move of the offseason in terms of people just kind of writing it off because it's not a glamour position and not realizing how big of a loss that's going to be. Also, that 49ers defense, especially that D-line, performed at a historic level last year. And we've seen eras of defense, right? Whether that was the Ravens there for a hot second, the Broncos for a hot second, the LOB, you know, they all have their one like super dominant year. And usually that ends in a Super Bowl. Well, the Niners had their super dominant year, that one year that you can hold it together on defense, and they lost the Super Bowl in devastating fashion. Now, there's no possible way that their defense is going to be as good as it was last year, especially when you factor in the loss of DeForest Buckner.
$4 million difference. So you're telling me that you would rather have Armstead and, I don't know, Jimmy Ward, who's making $4 million, and maybe there's some better examples, too, that are in that range. But, gosh, Jerick McKinnon, I think, is a $4 million cap savings if you were to cut him. You can't get by with one less $4 million player on the team, and you have that upgrade of DeForest Buckner over Eric Armstead?
Well, apparently they didn't value them that way. Paying Eric Armstead 7/8 of the price of DeForest Buckner, but getting half the production. Okay.
That makes
zero sense, but good luck with that. Also, let's take a peek at that secondary here. One of the reasons why they had such a great year as a whole is because that defensive line played at a historic level. If they can't reproduce that, that defensive backfield is vulnerable, man. They only have one player worth a catfish, and it's because we trained him.
Yeah, they gave Ward a 3-year, $28 million extension to stay on the team, but Richard Sherman is the guy on that defense.
Yeah.
And
I won't crap all over Jimmy Ward. He's actually a fine player.
Yeah, he's fine.
But he's not an elite player at the position.
No, that's why he was the one that I initially threw in there, because his cap hit is relatively low this year, just the way they spread out the deal and structuring his extension. But yeah, I think you could find a guy even out on free agency probably right now that could come in and fill in at about that level, to where it could make up that difference between Armstead and DeForest Buckner. So there's still a lot of other moves that we look at for the Niners in the offseason. The guy I wanted to talk about was Emmanuel Sanders leaving. That's going to be a huge hit for them.
That's an enormous hit for them. And I hadn't gotten to the pass catching stable of receivers there in San Francisco, because Deebo Samuel breaks his foot in the offseason. He's pushing to be back by week one. Okay, cool. So even if he does come back by week one, week two, how many more weeks does it take Deebo Samuel to get back into form? And on top of that, with a year of the league, you know, having tape on the way that they deployed Deebo Samuel without the threat of Emmanuel Sanders there to help unlock that offense, they're going to have him on lockdown. You go, well, they brought in Ayuk, the rookie. Look, man, and I've said this a zillion times, and it happens to be the truth. Rookie receivers rarely make an impact in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, last year was an anomaly, and I'm not just talking about DK. I'm talking about kind of that rookie class as a whole.
AJ Brown, yeah, him having a big impact.
Right. But that rest of that wide receiver core, it's piss poor. I mean, people complain about Russ's weapons. Dante Pettis? Even the Niners fans hate Dante Pettis.
Right.
And then who else?
Well, your number one is George Kittle. That's your number one passing target.
I'm excited to talk about George Kittle.
But Garrett Celek, he left in this offseason. Marquise Goodwin, he left. You know, losing Emmanuel Sanders is the big one, but you're counting on, and, you know, maybe they're looking for more receivers here going into this offseason. Maybe they bring in Antonio Brown.
I would love that. Please do it faster. Because when you have a locker room that, I know it's not out there, I know it's not being talked about, but a locker room and a defense looking at its quarterback and going, if you could just not be a dumpster fire in crunch time with a little pressure on you, we'd all have a ring.
Yeah.
And let's bring in an Antonio Brown to start, you know, stirring things up in the locker room on top of that, on top of dealing with a heartbreaking loss in the Super Bowl, which I heard a podcast with Kyle Shanahan the other day. He's not doing good with it, man.
Oh, he's still struggling with it.
Oh, man. He's like, well, we're going to watch it when we first come back and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, I love these decisions.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
Good luck with that. Then you factor in, and I think this is the biggest problem that you're starting to see with the San Francisco 49ers, is what Pat Riley coined the disease of more. Pat Riley, the former coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, the New York Knicks, and the Miami Heat in the NBA. When a team starts to succeed, especially when they don't really have a track record of success within their lifetime. I mean, like when you're the San Francisco 49ers and you're an organization that hasn't been above 514 of the last 20 seasons, you get real excited about one good year. Mm-hmm. It's real cute when they do. I mean, it's a little golf clap and, you know, that sort of thing. But guys tend to get a big head. And that brings us to George Kittle. Was George Kittle awesome last year? Hell yeah. Is he looking for a...
He finished in the top 10 of the top 100 NFL players.
So all the talk is, well, it's time to pay George Kittle like a wide receiver, number one, right? Because he's your number one pass catcher.
Yeah.
Think about guys who've done that in the past. Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
Gronk. Mm-hmm. What happens the second after they give those dudes a contract like that? They either don't give them the contract and trade them. Right.
Like it happened with Graham.
Right. Or they do give them the contract and their body explodes.
That was unique to Gronk.
Was it? I would not say that was unique to Gronk. Did that not happen to Jimmy Graham as well?
They did give him the big contract, but yes, his body did explode in that. But there's been guys like Tony Gonzalez, right? Who's been in that upper tight end tier.
But they've never demanded the wide receiver kind of money.
Yeah.
And not given it, right? It's that lesser tier.
Is Kelsey in that lesser tier? Has he been paid yet?
He has not been paid yet.
No.
And then think about the way that Kittle plays. He plays like a man possessed and he's undersized.
Kelsey got his contract. He got a 5-year. Well, that's not being paid like a wide receiver.
It is not. It's like what, 10 mil a year?
Yeah.
What's the top wide out making right now?
Julio Jones, 22 mil a year. Amari Cooper, 20 mil. and Michael Thomas.
You balked at me when I said 20.
Yeah.
So twice as much, okay, as the top tight end.
I was thinking, you know, Odell, Tyreek Hill, they're at 18, but yeah, there's four guys above them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So now you pay George Kittle $20 million, a player who I promise you, and I don't wish this upon him, because I want everybody to be healthy and compete in, you know, just to, if we're going to beat people, we want to beat people at their best, right? But he's going to have a short shelf life as a player.
What's the incentive for the 49ers to give him any more than 16 per year? I think he should be ecstatic if, as a tight end, he can pull 16.
So what leverage do the Niners have?
To
say, no, you don't get wide receiver money, you get 16.
They can keep franchise tagging him.
Yeah, so you franchise tag him and then he pulls a Jamal Adams on you?
He could.
Do you want to start playing that game with locker room chemistry and all that stuff?
That would be my preference, is for him to suddenly be a problem within the locker room, getting the franchise tag.
He's just the start. That's the thing. This is what the disease of Moore is all about. So your best player comes up for contract negotiations, right? And he's demanding way more than the top paid player at his position. Now, you also have other players on the team. You saw Mostert.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier this offseason, start complaining, demand a trade. They have to sit down with them, restructure some things, right? Every one of these dudes is starting to feel their britches. Like, they're starting to just feel it, man. And mm-hmm. they want more. It's going to be a freaking problem for them going forward. And if you pay Kittle that kind of money, man, going forward, that is going to hamstring your organization. It's going to make this window real short. It's probably already shut.
It's going to be tough. I mean, they're already a guy like Dee Ford. His cap number for this year is $16 million. And what has he done really to contribute for the team?
Well, this year
he's not their top defensive lineman.
Top pass rusher? No, the biggest thing he did this year was actually not jump off sides.
It's important.
Yeah, in comparison to the year before.
Richard Sherman, they're getting close to a decision on what to do with him long term after this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting.
This is their last chance this year. And you're telling me that Scaredy Pants Jimmy G is going to actually make that next step again this year and really put them over the top? Because that's what they're going to need, because they're losing their defensive leader, and that defense is going to take a step back. That means that offense needs to take a step forward, and they've lost Emmanuel Sanders, and the rest of their wide receiving core is not amazing. Deebo, I don't believe, is a true number one. He's a weird hybrid kind of a player. He's a good player, but he's not a true number one. And then your next biggest weapon after Kittle is Juszczyk?
Yeah.
And you're telling me that offense, after a year of tape put out, is going to be the one that makes a step forward to get these guys past 13 wins. They're going to improve on that.
Are you doubting the brilliance of Shanahan?
I might just be.
It sounds to me like you are.
I just don't see it. This is a 9-win team.
I was looking at Pro Football Focus and their quarterbacks who were affected most by the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
10 players on this list, and I don't know exactly how they ranked 1 to 10, but one data point was the difference in their passing grade when under pressure, as well mm-hmm. as the actual percentage that they were under pressure. Number one on the list, Sam Darnold of the Jets. He had a 50.2 difference in his passing grade when pressured, and then he was also pressured at 42% of the time.
Yeah, it was a tough road to hoe for old Sam there.
Here's a name that I think you like on this list. At number two, Matt Ryan.
Who?
At a 48-point difference in his passing grade, and he was under pressure last year 39% of the time.
First year he's been left off the top 100, too. It was about time. Overdue.
It's a little bit easier, though, when you have Julio, that you can just, if you're under pressure, just throw it in his direction.
Yeah, still couldn't get it done.
He got it done pretty well.
What, Matt Ryan? He was affected the most. Or second most.
Affected, but he still, I think, as a quarterback last season, was effective.
Yeah.
He put up yards.
Neat. Green zone yards. Fantastic. Might as well be Kirk Cousins.
He was at number five on this list. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, he was down at number nine.
worst of it, out of the 10 worst quarterbacks against pressure, Jimmy G's in the group.
He is in the group.
Yeah, that passes the eyeball test too.
The difference in this is the amount of pressure that he was actually under this past season, where, you know, I talked about pressure rate for guys like Darnold and Matt Ryan being up, you know, near or about 40%. Ryan Fitzpatrick was one of those guys pressured at 40%, and he was in the top three. But Jimmy Garoppolo had a 45-point difference in his passing grade when pressured, but just because he was pressured at a lower amount at 30% of the time, that's what puts him on the lower end of this list.
Right.
But you start to see more pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. That 45-point difference isn't going to go down.
I mean, there's no possible way that that goes down. People say, well, he had the knee that he's coming back from last year, and it takes a full year for a player to trust it and all that stuff. Dude, this isn't about his knee. He gets flustered. He gets absolutely flustered, just doesn't see dudes, and just starts chucking things up. He just starts becomes a chucker, man. He becomes a chucker when he's under pressure, and he doesn't have a chucker's arm like to be successful.
How are they doing with their returning offensive linemen?
It's about the same.
Is it?
Yeah. You mentioned the Staley Williams flip-flop. 6-1, half a dozen the other.
Because they have a pretty good, a decent center in Weston Richburg, right?
Their line's fine. I think they brought Ben Garland back and maybe in a backup role.
Maybe they're going to be okay in terms of offensive line.
I think the personnel is fine. To me, it's all about the scheme. In the league catching up to the scheme. We saw it with the Rams when the year they went to the Super Bowl, all of a sudden their games got really close. They lost a couple games. Then they go to the Super Bowl and get smothered, right? And then the next year the league was like, yeah, no more of that. Let's talk about the Niners' last few games of the year. Their last five regular season games and then the playoffs, right?
Yeah, let's look at that.
Their last five regular season starts with a loss to the Atlanta Falcons, maybe the worst team in the league, 29-22. Then they eke out a win over the Rams, 34-31. And then they beat us by a half an inch in Century League, 26-21.
Yeah.
Then they beat the Vikings, who, I mean, the Vikings were terrible. And then the Packers can't play on the road in the playoffs. Cool. They beat them. And then they lose to the Chiefs in devastating fashion. Look, the league was already starting to catch up with this offense. These games started to get close. Early in the year, they were blowing people out. All the Kyle Shanahan praise was flowing.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were undefeated going into that game against Seattle.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, the league started to figure it out. The games got a lot closer. They're not going to be a juggernaut for the first two-thirds of a season like they were last year. And that's going to cost them. It's going to be a lot like the Rams season. If they start out after that loss they had in the Super Bowl, they start out 3-4 and shots start getting fired in the locker room, which you know they are. Well, Jimmy G's choking away games this year. What's going on? Sherman's not happy about it. The headlines almost write themselves. Kittle's contract didn't get done during the offseason, and now he's starting to grumble. It goes on and on and on, man.
It's going to be fun to watch.
They're catfished!
I guess there is one question on their offensive line. Mike Person, who was their right guard last season, they let him go. So it looks like they're between a couple dudes.
Like McGlinchey, maybe? Or
well, McGlinchey's the right tackle.
Okay. Well, they're talking about moving him around.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, that could be interesting because I guess they have a choice between Daniel Brunskill and Tom Compton at right guard.
Either way, there'll be money, right?
Those are names I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, that I don't know. It'll be an interesting season. Obviously, I hate them with the passion of 1,000 burning suns. And so, everything's going to be negative. I just looking at history, man. That's how it unfolds for these teams.
Well, I look at some of their latest signings, and I would, as a 49ers fan, I wouldn't be super excited going into the season. When you have Jamar Taylor on your team as depth, I mean, that's when you know.
Like, right.
And even Deion Jordan, who.
Yeah.
They just signed him on the defensive line as a depth piece.
No, I mean, we all agree he's done. Yeah. Like yeah,
how he was OK for that. I mean, I think I would have preferred to have him over Ziggy Ansah last year, as it turned out. But that wouldn't have been that much of an upgrade. I mean, they're about the same guy.
I don't know that was any difference. Yeah.
And they looked at both of those guys, apparently, and said Deion Jordan was the better guy.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
And then they got Jordan Reed, tight end from Washington.
Yeah, he'll, unfortunately, like, I actually like Jordan Reed, the player, a bunch.
He's a good player when he's healthy.
Well, and the healthy part isn't like, oh, he's always hurting his knee. It's, oh, he's always hurting his brain.
Yeah.
I'm worried about him in his future. Just, I don't think it was smart for him to come back. He's just, so, it was like watching Wes Welker with the Broncos. There, yeah,
that was the name that I was going to bring up is.
And Steve Young towards the end of his career, right?
Yeah.
Like, just, I just don't want to see that, man.
Maybe he puts it all together. He can go out on his own terms this year.
Unlikely.
I guess there were other signing Travis Benjamin. He opted out for this season.
Yeah.
He was their one opt out. There were three of them in the NFC West. Chance Warmack, Marcus Gilbert for the Cardinals, and then Travis Benjamin for the Niners.
What I get out of that is those three guys probably managed their money well.
Maybe. Yeah. Travis Benjamin, didn't he get a big payday last season?
Last season, the season before.
And didn't really play much.
There was a minute there where Travis Benjamin was a pretty good receiver.
And they got him on a value contract this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he gone. Much like their chances of winning the NFC West this year.
And I think with that, I think it's time to get to the second half of the show.
Sounds good.
Getting into the second half of the show. Adam, we've been on this topic of quarterback rankings here these last few shows. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling like our thoughts on this list have been validated once again as Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. He went out and got the 50. He had 50 or more executives, coaches, scouts, and players who gave their top 10 lists, top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. Okay. Russell Wilson, he finished number two on the list behind Patrick Mahomes. You know, it's kind of, that seems to be how the lists, most lists are shaping up.
Sure.
In this offseason. But the interesting part to me was how the NFC West quarterback shaped up. Obviously, Russell number two.
Yeah.
49ers fans, though, were incensed.
Incensed.
To see that Kyler Murray was outside the top 10, but got the most top 10 votes among the rest of the NFC West quarterbacks.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I were to guess out of those three, which one would get more top 10 votes somehow by the grace of God, I would guess Kyler.
Yeah. And then Jimmy G got two top 10 votes.
Now we know who the two alcoholics are out of all those executives.
Yeah. And then I don't think Jared Goff got any.
All right. Well, maybe they're not like full blown alcoholics then. Maybe they're still like functional alcoholics.
Maybe they had two 49ers executives or players who were part of this pool and they had to throw in Jimmy as the top 10 guy.
Yeah.
They're taking handsomeness factoring it in.
Oh, well, much like Trent Williams, he says he's the hottest thing walking the Bay Area, the Jimmy G.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's enamored with his new quarterback.
I mean, I think you could expand it a little bit, the borders beyond the Bay Area.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just, Trent Williams is new, so, yeah.
I had no idea he'd be this handsome in person.
Gobsmacked.
Well, again, just another off-season list where I think our opinions were validated and by people who are actually in the league. So, good to know.
And that's cool. I mean, I appreciate that and everything, but turns out that more often than not, our opinions are right. I know that's annoying to some people, but you know, it's just how it is. So as far as the validation goes, I feel like it's when we say something that validates them, they should be very thankful for that.
All right, Adam, what do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
All right, man. I love it.
Got some new members, got some people coming in with contributions as well, starting with David Sanborn. I think I need to email David. I can't remember if I responded to him or not. $20, though, a donation. And David says, overtaken with guilt for listening for over a year for free.
No, you're still in your window, bud. It's okay. You don't know. Cleanse your hawker. Do not feel the guilt, man. Like you're in now. You did it. No more guilt. This isn't the Catholic Church. We're not going to give you a bunch of guilt, okay?
No. Especially if you're in your window.
Yeah, which you are.
Someone who's donated multiple times to the show, Jason in Portland, comes in with $30, says, holy catfish! I remember being excited about the 100th show. Well done. Just well
catfish
done. Please accept my 300 dimes, aka sexy deep balls, one for each show. Appreciate you guys. Jason from Portland.
Awesome, dude. Appreciate it a ton. Yeah, man, it is a little surreal to get to 300. Well, really 301, I guess, right?
Yeah.
We're doing it. We're marching on.
This might actually be our podiversary today.
Is it?
I think so. It's right around the double digits part of August.
I just was kind of going to go the whole show with that just to see if you would have actually remembered. I was a little offended and like a little sad. Like, you didn't even remember our podiversary, man.
I did. I remembered it just
it's
as
year something and that, you know, you should have gotten me something or at least told me I'm pretty.
Do you remember what date it is?
You know, it's the 3rd, 19th, 4.
Yeah. When you're up in the sevens, you start to lose track. It's like birthdays once you're past this year, 21. Wait,
what, this season's what, like 7 or 8 for us? Where are we at?
We're starting our 8th season, right?
Yeah, starting the 8th season. Yeah.
Started in 2013.
There we go. That was season one.
Season one.
2020 will be our 8th.
So thanks to Jason in Portland. And welcome to the flock to Curtis Green, who came in at $3 via getintheflock.com.
Sweet, man. Curtis is going to get the enjoyment of the Pick'em League. And that's something that we're doing a little research on now as we speak, or at least you are. I'm going to use the term we like I actually participate. that's coming.
Yes, we did post the link to our Ring of Honor members of the Facebook group just to test it out, see how the process goes with signing up. So I think I'm leaning towards CBS Sports this year as the platform to use for our Pick'em League. So tiebreakers are going to be done a little bit differently with because they don't have a ton of different options. But I think I'm going to go with people who get their picks in first as the tiebreaker.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, expediency.
Yeah. And then that way I don't have to do the math of how many points in any particular game.
If I were to run for president, one of my major planks of my platform would be anything that requires me to do less math would be like, you know, one of my big things in my campaign.
So you're supportive of this?
I am.
Yeah.
If the solution requires less math, I'm in.
And then it's just a motivator to get your picks in early. Now, if something happens during the week and you change your pick because of an injury, then, you know, you might lose that that early spot that you would have by picking early. Yeah. But
yeah,
I think that's just the way
to go. Add some drama.
Adds a little drama because you go, ooh, is it worth to lose my spot in the early picks to change my selection?
I don't know. I'm curious to see how Curtis handles that with it in his first year in the Ring of Honor.
It's going to add some stress, Curtis.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. And he's got to come up with a team name.
How did they handle team names on CBS Sports? That's something we're going to have to explore.
Yeah. So we need to get there.
I'm glad we have our Ring of Honor folks there to help us out, at least through this initial start of the process.
Yeah. If there's anybody that can solve it, it's that fine quality group of people.
Because if it just ends up being our names, I don't think
that's not acceptable.
Not acceptable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Hector is back in through getintheflock.com, so thanks to Hector.
There was a disturbance in the force there for a while, like with my hawker and everything, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was, and it was Hector's absence.
Yes, he's back.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Whew. Things are better.
Also, we selected our winner of the July Tiny Pieces of Seahawks stuff.
Fantastic.
Nathan Combs is going to get the Russell Wilson piece of white jersey, Prestige 2018.
Fantastic, man. That'll be cool. And he can find a place to stash that tiny piece of Seahawks stuff and hopefully not lose it, because that would be what I would do.
You don't want to lose it.
Yeah.
I think for the month of August at tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com, we have Wolf Gray, tiny piece of Seahawks jersey, and the Russell Wilson. Let's see, what is this? Absolute football. It's even numbered number 161 of 199. So an individually numbered Russell Wilson card with a tiny piece of Wolf Gray jersey in it.
So they were able to cut that jersey into 199 pieces?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Not 200. Just shy.
No, that last little piece, it was just too short to fit in the square.
Or do you think they cut it into 200 pieces and then had a manufacturing error with the card, like embedding it, and it just ruined it? And they're like, oh, man, now it's got to be one of 199, not 200.
That's a good question.
I feel like this card company has some splaining to do.
We should get a representative from Panini on just to figure out how the heck they do this.
Yeah. Now, do you like put the jersey out like on a table and then cut up with like a pizza cutter? Is there like a robot involved? Is there a CNC machine? Or is it just, you know, a pair of scissors with rounded ends for people like me that they just go and they cut it up with? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm curious. And like, what do they do? Is it just the main part of the jersey? Like, what about the number sections and things like that? What about
I've
the
had
collar?
Some of these that have number sections in them.
Okay, so the thicker parts, like the collar and stuff, like how do they handle that?
Yeah, I haven't seen the collar. Ah. But see, like with this CJ ProSize one, it's the actual inside the number.
It surely is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of disembodied Seahawks collars, jersey collars out there somewhere.
Just a pile of collars. I wonder how far down on the sleeves they go.
Depends on if you have the elastic on the bottom, right?
They have to cut that off.
So like some archaeologist someday, like, you know, 4,000 years in the future is going to come across this pile of like jersey collars and sleeve cuffs. And be like, well, they must have sacrificed football players live here. They cut them apart at the arms and the neck.
It's too bad we're not going to be around to know what they think of that.
Says you.
Be like all the t-shirts from the Super Bowl losers that they dig up in Africa somewhere.
Hey, man, you do have to give our NFC West rivals like a lot of credit for really helping the children of Africa in, you know, a shortage of clothing. Like they're just so generous that way.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Another member of our flock who is generous, mm-hmm. Hong Kong Hawk, Dave Bloomquist.
Always and forever.
He sent us a congratulatory note for episode 300.
Oh.
Hey, Brandon and Adam. A hearty congratulations from Hong Kong for your 300th podcast. I've been there for each one of them, and I've even listened to some of them in regular speed. You guys have done a great job of building a family, whether it's been in the Facebook group, in a Seattle meetup, or my favorite pub in London. Thank you for everything. Go Hawks, and 300 plus more.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, Bloomy, appreciate that, man. Obviously, that family wouldn't be the same without you, and you're an integral piece to it. So really appreciate the warm wishes, though.
Bloomy also gave me some intel on perhaps where the Seahawks could put Geno Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we suggested to put him on an island.
Right.
Inside Lake Washington. But he found out that there's this place called Vulcan Point Island in the Philippines.
Okay.
It's actually an island that's in a lake that is on an island in a lake on an island in the ocean.
It's an island on a lake.
So on this island, there's a lake. On that lake, there's another island. But within that island, there's also a lake that has an island in it.
I'm looking this up. I need to see an aerial view because it sounds like one of those, you know, those nesting Russian dolls, right?
Right.
Okay.
If you Google recursive islands and lakes, it'll tell you just all over the world where there's one islands that are within lakes, islands that are in lakes on islands, and then islands in lakes on islands in lakes.
Okay. All right. I got it. I see it on the Google Maps here. So I get it now. Picture like one big island, right? And it's a volcano. Yeah. Like that traditional looking volcano with like a cone at the top. So the whole island is a volcano. Then in the cone of the volcano, there's a lake. And then it must have erupted again and brought up another point up in the middle, right? And within that is another lake. And then there's a little rock that sticks out in the smallest lake in the middle.
And that's where we put Geno Smith.
I never knew that that existed, but clearly, that's where Geno Smith needs to be tucked away.
The sad thing was, is I think there was another eruption and it emptied that lake. And so now it's just a point of a mountain.
I'm looking at this. This is imagery from 2020.
Yeah, this says until 2020, Vulcan Point was an island that existed in the main crater lake of Volcano Island in Lake Taal. But main crater lake evaporated during the 2020 Taal volcano eruption.
But it could come back with some more rain.
With just some rain.
Yeah. But is it more risky to put Geno on the top of a volcano?
It already erupted in 2020. It'll be fine.
So you're good now.
I mean, how often does the Taal volcano erupt?
In the Philippines. You know, that is not information I have off the top of my head. I don't know.
You should know this. Yeah. It reminds me of information that's just off the top of my head. Sometimes it's weird. I was on How Bizarre podcast with Christopher Hart and Ron Evans.
Oh, yeah.
The Space Pod guys. And the news quiz question that we had as part of the episode was, what was Earl Thomas's response in the message that he put out over the summer after he was, you know, involved with his brother and the ladies when his wife came in the room and pointed a gun at everybody?
Yeah, these things happen.
See, you knew it too. It was a four multiple choice. Yeah. These things happen, bro.
Yeah, these things happen. Nah, do they, Earl? I mean, technically your statement's true, but I don't know that it happens on the regular, my man.
So I'm glad you would have got that too.
Yeah.
I didn't even need the multiple choice, but.
No. No. That's hilarious.
Got some reviews this past week.
Hey, all right.
One from BJ Pester says, I love this podcast. I absolutely love this. Adam is hilarious and Brandon is so smart and organized. I was fired up when I heard that Jamal Adams was traded to the Hawks. I agree with Adam and not Rob in the reaction episodes. I prefer getting veteran players and trading picks than drafting and not getting those veteran players. I recommend this podcast for anyone who is a Seahawks fan and has a sense of humor.
Catfish!
The 49ers and go Hawks.
Hey, man. So he totally gets it. Like, this is mostly us just like clowning around with some Seahawks stuff in there, which, you know, we tend to, I think, nail it.
Charlie the 12 also in says, best podcast. Hello, Brandon and Adam. My name is Charlie and I am 12 years old, displaced fan from Indiana. I love this podcast because of the comedy, the Skip Bayless hate, and the people you bring in like Rob Staten, Clinton Bonner, and the Hong Kong Hawk. This is why this is my favorite podcast, and 5 stars from Charlie.
Dude, thanks, Charlie. Like, I'm impressed at 12. He's using words like displaced.
It's good.
I could barely make a sentence at 12, I think. So, I mean, Charlie is clearly better at life than Skip Bayless.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Appreciate the review, Charlie. Brian from Caldwell, Idaho comes in, says hello. Oh, yes, this one. And I had to square this away with Brian. So I do want to read the email, though.
Oh, OK. All right. Yeah.
But Brian and I are cool now. Just know that going into hearing this.
Oh, OK. Well, yeah. Now this is perplexing. What happened?
Says, my name is Brian and I'm from Caldwell, Idaho. I've been listening to the show for about 1.5 years now, and I truly enjoy the content. It has uplifted my spirits on many occasions throughout the heart attack inducing season they call the 2019 Seahawks football.
Word.
Speaking of which, proudly say I've been a 12 since birth, 86. And growing up, my favorite player was Rick Meyer. OG number 3, baby. I'm not trying to be that guy, but if the situation demands, what can I do? So, guys, come on. Your show is better than this. At the end of almost every episode, the drumline track. What do you hear the crowd shouting? Is it Seahawks or Go Hawks to your ears? Maybe my Packer fan hatred is controlling my hearing, but I swear I hear Go Pack Go. Please understand how truly difficult it was for me to even write that, not to mention be aware of it enough to dodge it on my own fandom podcast.
Do you think his fingers burned when he typed that?
I think it's feeling like that, yeah.
Yeah, oh man, I feel bad for Brian all of a sudden, yeah.
I may still be a freeloader, but this podcast is my energy center to fully heal my chakra. I can't sit idly by whilst this travesty is vomited upon the internet's best example of a sports podcast in general and Seahawks fandom in specific. One has the ability to bear witness to. Your show has helped millions of lives by keeping me sane during the offseason. And you guys just kick ass in general. So much, in fact, that if you ever happen to send me stickers of the show's logo, I would proudly plaster them on every available surface. But this whole outro issue has got to go. Y'all better than this. Do better. Also,
catfish
the four Araka and go Hawks.
I love it. I love it. I guess I never thought that that's what that sounded like. Can you play it right now just so that we can all hear what actually goes on?
Yeah, it would be good just so people can know, because I don't want this being a problem for anybody.
Right.
Brian clearly pointed out that this was an issue to him.
Oh my goodness. I feel terrible for Brian in the fact that maybe like he needs a hearing examination, because if he's like hearing things that are clearly, let's go see Hawks as go Pack go, I can't imagine what other things he's hearing wrong in his life that is torturing him. And I don't want him to feel that pain.
No,
like I want things to be better for him.
No. And so what I ended up doing is I can see where there is some audio degradation that goes from the actual copy of the song versus what ends up being posted out, because I sent him the actual song and explained to Brian that, hey, this is the Blue Thunder drum line for one. That's part of it. And they would not be involved in anything that would say go Pack go. Then listening to the full song in context, he could hear the Let's Go Seahawks and in the higher quality audio. So,
Okay.
We did get the squared away.
Good. Because I didn't want him to have to live with that thought in his head.
I still wanted to bring it up just in case there is somebody else out there that may have the question.
Yeah, I mean, by throwing himself on the sword to, you know, bring this to the public light, like it might help some other poor 12 out there.
Yeah.
Was mishearing that. So
the Hawkra has been balanced in Brian's life.
All right, good, man. Like that's what we're here for him.
DCH also came in. Lightning strikes twice on my way home from the store tonight, and I'm re-listening to the Cards Know Your Rivals episode. Little MCH falls asleep as we pull into the garage. He wakes up at the perfect time and says, wait, what are they drowning in the tub?
Oops.
Too good. Also, awesome job on number 300. Loved it.
Cool, thanks, man. I often forget that there's also a bunch of different demographics that listen to the show.
Because who was it? Michael Paul? Who?
He fell asleep and like woke up as a right about that moment too. It's like wait, I gotta rewind to understand.
There's just some times that you don't want to come into the show at. You need the context.
No, yeah, you need context matters. Yes.
All right. Well, Jared Kelly on Twitter, he sent in a tweet that someone on Twitter was hyping up a particular quarterback, Adam. I don't know if you want to go down this list, but so this is NFL road rankings for quarterbacks.
Okay. How they are on the road?
Yeah. Over a 3-year span, 2016. Well, let's see. 2016, 17, 4-year span, okay. 2016 through 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you suppose the number one passer rating for quarterbacks on the road over 4 years?
Over 4 years? What if they haven't played 4 years?
It could be someone who's just played 2 or 3 years, but has the minimum 750 attempts to qualify for the list.
Okay, I'm going to go with Brady.
Matt Ryan, 103.4.
Neat.
Who do you suppose is number one in touchdown passes?
On the road?
Yeah.
The Mahomes.
Matt Ryan, 66.
Wait, was 16 his aberration MVP season?
It was.
Yeah, okay.
This does include his MVP season. Number one in adjusted yards per attempt.
That'd be Russ.
Matt Ryan.
I still don't. I guess I'm confused because I just don't know who this Matt Ryan character is that you keep referring to.
Number one in passing yards and completions.
Aaron Rodgers.
Matt Ryan.
Like, are they confusing like a bunch of different dudes as one guy?
No.
And they're calling him this generic name?
It is all Matt Ryan. And it is because it includes the MVP season.
This is one good year.
I thought you might enjoy that.
Matty mediocre.
The fun thing is, though, is I wanted to know just why it was cherry picked in just this format.
I have a question. Where does this come from? Yes.
I'm pretty sure it's a Falcons fan because I wanted to look, okay, why did they pick just road games and not home games? So I went and looked at who the player was that has the number one ranking in all these categories, who did it at home.
Mm.
Number one in passer rating, Saints quarterback Drew Brees.
Okay.
Number one in touchdown passes, Saints quarterback Drew Brees. Number one in passing yards, completions, and average yards per attempt, quarterback Drew Brees.
Biggest thorn in Atlanta Falcons side for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Drew Brees.
So obviously they're going to just exclude Drew Brees' home games from this particular list.
Yeah.
If you do 2016 to 2019 combined home and away, passer rating, Mahomes, touchdown passes, Russell Wilson, average yards per attempt, Mahomes, and I think Russ was number two.
Mm-hmm.
But then Matt Ryan gets it for passing yards and completions.
Yep. Dink and dunking and just getting that yardage in between the 20s in the green zone.
Yep.
What a killer quarterback.
So thanks to Jared Kelly on Twitter for sending that in.
Yeah.
He knew that you were going to enjoy that, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, enjoy is a subjective word there, but I'm sorry that Jared had to endure reading that in the first place.
As soon as any listener hears something about Matt Ryan, they think of you now.
Who?
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. Might do better this week. I'm not going to lie. I didn't put a lot of time or effort in this because I just read the headline and I was pissed about it. And that was enough for me. I didn't need to research it anymore. I didn't need to look into it a second longer.
So you're like 100% of the people on the internet.
Exactly. Yes. I try not to do this, but this is just where I'm at right now. So my do better this week is for 12th Man Rising, the website. They have to come out with articles on the daily, right? And I know it's a stretch to have to come up with things to talk about, but this was the headline, Brandon. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Like, do you feel the anxiety in the air? Like, this is a big deal, Brandon.
I like 12th Man Rising.
The Seahawks without a top 40 fantasy football player this year. My stars, Brandon. Whatever are we going to do? Because in fake football land, we don't have a top 40 player. In a league that doesn't matter because it doesn't really exist in anywhere but people's heads, we don't have a top 40 player. Let's write an article about it. Oh, no. What shall the Seahawks do?
I did see that article and I immediately thought of you reading that article and how you would react.
I did not read the article and I don't know how they frame it as if it's like, well, they don't have a top 40 fantasy player. So in real football, they're in trouble. Or if it's, they don't have a top 40 fantasy player. So good luck, you know, suggesting who to select on your fake team that nobody else cares about. Like, I don't, what was it?
It was, I think it was just pointing out that Chris Carson just barely made the, just was outside the top 40, that Russell Wilson was outside of the top 40. It was just pointing out on where this particular list that Seahawks players ranked. I don't think it was a detriment to Seattle's season and couched in that way.
Okay. Well, it is a detriment to fantasy football because
you know who should be on that
system
list, though? DK Metcalf should be in the top 40.
Well, there you go. Exactly. In your system, somehow, the second best player in the entire National Football League, according to his peers, the second best quarterback in the entire league, according to, well, everybody, even drunk 49ers executives. Like, if he is not a top 40 pick in your league is broken. The whole thing stinks. I hate fantasy football to begin with. It changes the way you watch football. And this is a great example of it because it shows that it does not value football players' greatness when it should appropriately. And to 12th Man Rising for reporting on this ridiculousness to begin with, do better.
Yeah, this was the Pro Football Focus fantasy draft list.
It's a fantasy that Russell Wilson isn't in that, or Bobby Wagner isn't in that, or it's broken. Their fantasy is broken.
The Seahawks actually have four players in the top 100 of fantasy and PFF's fantasy rankings.
Okay, in the top 100, but not the top 40.
No, zero in the top 40.
Yeah, well, it's still weighted wrong.
My do better this week is for a return of Mr. Unlimited to the internet this week, Adam. And it's not because yeah. Russell Wilson posted a new video about his alter ego that Seahawks fans know so well from about 2 years ago, but it's because Warren Sharp, and at least I think he's the guy who's taking credit for it, because I was listening to a podcast with Warren Sharp, and he was saying how he came across this video. He didn't think it got enough attention from 2 years ago, and so he tweeted it out as though it was something brand new, and that blew up here this past week. Did you catch any of this?
I did not. I caught that the Mr. Unlimited video had made a reappearance.
Yeah.
But I was a little sad because that wasn't the one I was thinking of when I saw the headline. I was thinking about the one where his dogs were having some digestive issues and it's unlimited diarrhea.
That was unlimited. The better video.
Yeah.
Maybe Warren will come across that one here in another 2 years and we can relive that one again too.
Relive that one too.
I think the thing that bothers me the most about the situation, though, was hearing Sharp explain it on this podcast, that he made the distinct decision, knowing that this video was 2 years old, to copy the video rather than retweet it from one of these past videos that would actually have the timestamp on it from 2 years ago.
Oh, so this was like trickeration to...
This was trickeration that he was like, oh, here's this new video with Russ that most people didn't see or had forgotten about. Because I'm kind of baffled that people... How did this not spread and get into the consciousness of most people?
Well, I think you're going to find it's going to spread just as much into the consciousnesses of people this time around as it did last time. Whereas in for a week or two, everybody's going to think it's pretty funny and there's going to be little shots and jokes and all that stuff. And then 2 years from now, none of us will remember that this happened for a second time.
For Warren Sharp, for bringing this up, resurrecting it, and bringing Mr. Unlimited back into people's consciousness after 2 years, after most of us had either pushed it out, put it behind us. But for taking credit is the problem that I have the most. Taking credit for resurfacing this video. Do better.
Yeah, man, I don't know why you're going back and dredging crap up just for the sake of dredging crap up. It's just not cool, man. It's a bad look.
I think he's trying to push Russell Wilson down the board with, let's be on the lookout for some Mahomes videos that we can really, you know, something embarrassing that we can bring back up.
Yeah, no, this is clearly like Russ is kind of getting his due this offseason, right? And this is the media's shot right here. Warren is doing this where he's trying to knock Russ back down a few pegs because they can't stand that, you know, he's actually an amazing player and most of them were dead ass wrong about him.
They got to take their shots where they can.
Yes. Yes.
On to better at life.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week, Brandon, is for an organization that you almost work for. You work for the Forest Service. Yeah.
Right.
This is from the National Park Service. Are you guys like related? Are they like cousin agencies? It's
not even in the same agency, but...
What? How is that possible?
The Park Service is in the Department of the Interior.
Yeah.
And Forest Service is the agricultural, the Ag Department.
What? How is the Forest Service in the Ag Department?
You grow trees.
Is the whole forest a tree farm? Because if you argue that, then I guess
it used to be
in the ag.
It used to be
in the ag place. But if it's more like, you know, national parks, if it's more of a park situation, a national forest, then like, shouldn't that be over in the interior?
You're not the first one to point this out. And actually the appropriations budget is combined with the Forest Service and interior, but or the
that
parks.
That sounds convoluted. Well,
it's complicated.
After this story,
we have a complicated relationship between the Forest Service and Park Service. So thanks for bringing that up.
That sounds great. Well, good for that. Well, now this is going to make it even more complicated because you're going to be jealous because these guys are hilarious. So the National Park Service come out the other day with some tips about what to do if you're attacked by a bear. And like the big reason they're coming out with these tips now is because, you know, with the COVID stuff, people are doing more outdoorsy kind of vacations, right? Oh, go to the park, you know, enjoy the outdoors. You can do the social distancing thing, right? Which, you know, puts you in a little more proximity with bears. Now, I know the tips of what to do with, you know, potential bear attack and how to deal with the bear. And usually it is just be cool and they'll be cool and you don't have to worry about nothing. But the National Park Service first tip uses an old joke that we have heard here in Montana a million times, but many of you maybe have not. First tip, please don't run from bears or push your slower friends down in attempts of saving yourself. I love it when official agencies, like somebody there has like some humor, right? Yeah,
they like understand.
Yeah, this is an old joke. Like you'd be out in the woods, right? And people are like, well, hey, where's your bear spray? You didn't bring that out. I don't know. I brought him. He's a lot slower than me. That's your bear protection.
Yeah.
So the National Park Service for bringing a little humor and levity to being mauled by a bear. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Wait, so we're not supposed to push down our slower friends if a bear's chasing after us?
Well, you are. But yeah, you're not supposed.
So you just allow them to be caught. You don't push them down.
Yeah, you just outrun them. I guess you just don't do the pushing. You just run faster.
That makes sense.
No, tip number one, don't run from a bear at all.
That's true.
Yeah, they like to chase things. They're kind of like a dog that way. So you don't run.
Yeah, it's like a play toy.
Yeah, and this isn't like the movie The Edge. Like, you remember that movie from way back? I think that was called Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins that crashed in a plane in Alaska. I hated this movie because they crashed a plane in Alaska and they're like trying to survive, right? Mm-hmm. And there's multiple scenes of like this grizzly bear like chasing them. And they're like outrunning the bear. If you've ever seen a bear run, like literally in two strides, they're at like 40 miles an hour, like straight up a hill if need be. Like
they're one of the fastest critters on the planet.
Their short area quickness is unbelievable.
Big like, sack.
Yeah. Big sack on them bears. And you're not outrunning them. So don't run from the bear. Most of the time, they don't want nothing to do with you anyway. And if they do, yeah, shove your friend.
Usually you just talk to your friend as you're walking through the woods and they'll stay away from you.
Yeah, that's a pro tip.
They just don't like things that make noise. It's kind of scares them.
Yeah, they just don't want to be snuck up on.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Good tips. Yeah. No bear selfies.
Right.
You know, just wild animal selfies in general.
Yeah.
Good rule of thumb.
Don't do it. Don't be that guy. Because there's always, I don't know if you see them every year, but there's always that video from Yellowstone of some dumbass tourist that like walks up to a giant bison and is surprised when the thing like messes up their day.
Yeah, it's usually the bison. And maybe it's because they just are kind of standing there and
yeah,
people think they're like cows.
Yes, they do somehow.
They got some pointy bits to them, though.
Yeah, some pointy bits and some strength. Don't tangle with the bison.
My better at life this week is for Blake Schuster of Bleacher Report.
Oh.
Yeah, not very often where we get Bleacher Report in the Better at Life segment, is it?
No, you're sneaking one in here.
The headline of this article, NFLPA creates whistleblower hotline to report COVID-19 protocol violations.
Okay, repeat the headline.
The NFLPA creates whistleblower hotline to report COVID-19 protocol violations. There's a lot of big words in there.
Yeah, the one I think it's missing is snitch.
When you see whistleblower, think snitch. When you hear NFLPA, it's the Players Association. Mm-hmm. They've created a snitch hotline for people to call in and report COVID violations with the teams.
Great.
So you think, well, gosh, if I'm going to write an article on this, I need a photo. I need a photo to go along with this particular article. So and probably not a lot of photographers, you know, you're relying on team photographers right now at practices anyway, and they're not going to be posting pictures of violations.
Yeah, that's fine. There's always Photoshop. Don't worry about it.
Well, the next best option is if you think about creating a hotline, you always see the quarterbacks on the team phone, right? On the sidelines. You think about that. Okay, we'll use a shot of that, a quarterback on a phone. Who's the most snitchy looking quarterback that we can find in the NFL?
Most snitchy. Let me think about that for half a minute here, because there's a few with that look like they ought to get some stitches, right? Like, I've always felt like Matt Ryan was in that conversation.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. Who else has kind of a tattletale kind of face to him? Boy, Andy Dalton looks like a snitch for some reason. I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's because you just can't trust redheads. Maybe that's what it is.
That could be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cam Newton.
I don't know.
Cam Newton might be a good snitch.
Nah, I don't think, honestly, out of all the Cam hate I have, I that's something I can't throw his way.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think he'd be a snitch.
The photograph. But,
who's the snitchiest guy? Yeah, who'd they go with?
I'm going to go with the one that was selected for this particular article, and it is Jared Goff. Jared Goff on the phone, calling in on the snitch line.
Jared Goff, definitely, without question, was the biggest tattletale on his siblings in the entire family, like out of all the siblings.
I don't know if he has siblings, but if he does.
It doesn't matter, and none of that is true, but I had to throw it out there just so y'all knew. And, you know, honestly, when this quarterbacking thing doesn't work out for him, he can become an FBI informant.
He could actually take this article and post it as part of his resume and say, look, people like Blake Schuster think I look enough like a snitch to post my photo along with the article of the whistleblower hotline. So for Blake Schuster, for putting Jared Goff in that position, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
It's great, man. That's hilarious.
Daniel Jones, maybe kind of.
Daniel Jones definitely looks like a snitch.
Drew Locke.
Nah.
Mitchell Trubisky.
He looks too confused to be a snitch.
Blake nailed it.
Yeah, he did. He did. I was trying to think of who is the guy that was competing with Trubisky 2 years ago. It was also an NC State quarterback, long neck.
Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon. Yeah, he's all sorts of snitchy.
For sure. If he were a starting quarterback still, because you have to pick a starting quarterback.
How about not based on looks, but actual personality? I think I might go with Nick Foles.
So you're saying, what I'm hearing from you, Adam,
yeah,
is that the Chicago Bears general manager has like an eye for snitchy looking quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's just drawn to them.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.